everyone, this is Haley G, co-host of the Pause Podcast. Today's guest is Noah Roy, founder and CEO of Homus. Homus is a data analytics and health technology company on a mission to harness real-world evidence to transform both research and care for behavioral health. With a background in finance and consulting, Noah was drawn to the healthcare industry due to its complexity and the potential for meaningful impact. He founded Homus in 2014 with the goal of organizing and analyzing data in the behavioral health sector, similar to what Bloomberg Terminal has done for the world of finance. In this episode, we talk about how Homus emphasized the need for a data-driven approach in assessing mental health conditions. We also chat about the role of artificial intelligence in Homus' core product offering and the importance of partnerships with government organizations like CMS and large payers to drive evidence-based decision-making and improve patient outcomes in the field of mental health. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Noah, thank you for joining me at the Pulse Podcast today. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me.
To kick us off, we have a tradition of asking each of our guests this icebreaker question. What did you want to be when you grew up?
I think I had multiple phases. When I was very young, I think below 20 years old, my aspiration was more to become a professor. As I got interested into the world of finance, my interest was to be a world-class investor. And as I was transitioning out of the world of finance, and I still really, really admire the people who are tier one investors, you know, be it George Soros, to be it, Warren Buffett of the world, or especially Charlie Munger of the world. Having said that, I think what I truly want to be over a period of time now is being an entrepreneur. Being a founder CEO appeals to me quite a lot. But as a child, I think I was more interested to be a scientist / professor.
That's really cool. So you mentioned a little bit just now on your background. You started your career from Wall Street, later moved into consulting and fintech. What brought you to healthcare in the first place almost 10 years ago?
I think there was a level of maturity that I had learned from the world of finance. And there is a sort of a relation as to what we have learned from finance, where else is applicable. And my understanding of the world of economics always saw the healthcare as a very large sector and how it truly impacts us on a day-to-day basis. Almost similar to what attracted me to economics when I was young to study, a similar thing attracted me to healthcare. And I think the gravity of the problem, how large it is what attracted me. The gravity of the complexity of the problem is what attracted me. And then as I kept understanding more and more, I think mental health has attracted from that perspective. Flippantly, I do say it's a midlife crisis. I know every once in a while I have said that, but the reality is the sheer nature of the complex problem of healthcare sector is extremely appealing, and the impact that you can have. If you are truly able to do something meaningful, then the impact value is seriously, seriously high.
Totally. I think in this industry, everyone talks so much about how complex and it's just a giant problem that no one has been ever able to fully solve for the longest that we can remember. So you founded Homus in June 2014, almost a decade ago now. And congratulations, I think it's going up to almost your 10-year anniversary at this point. Share with us a little, what inspired you to found Homus? What does the company do now? And what was your original vision in 2014?
Yeah. So when I started, I have come from the world of finance. I'm very impressed by what Bloomberg Terminal have done, especially for the world of finance, especially the trading part of the world. And in simplicity, the way I say it, it's the simplest way to organize all the data and bring the data available to, you know, stakeholders. That was the key value proposition that Bloomberg have done for the last 45 years. And if you look at the world of finance before 80s or before 90s versus what it is in 2015 and 2023, year 2024, you see a vast difference. It's almost like completely different. Healthcare, when I started, my intent was that it's currently in the almost like where finance was before 1980. So my key intent was to organize as much data as possible and remove the expert system of decision making in the healthcare and replace that by a very data-driven approach to thinking, debating, And so there is not a debate of opinion, but a debate of data-centric approach to solving a problem. That was the key premise. Certainly, my whole focus initially was NCD, non-communicable disease area. Mental health was a subset of it, but not the primary, not the only area. We used to work across every other non-communicable disease areas. But as we kept going deeper into it, and as you started scaling, we started focusing on mental health. And, you know, 10 years into it, now we do only mental health and nothing else.
So you just mentioned Homas is powered by data. When you first joined the field of behavioral health, what was the role of data in this field? And what are you trying to improve or innovate in this industry specifically now that you specialize in mental health?
Yeah. So when we started at that particular time, if you ask anyone, hey, I'm looking for longitudinal data of even say 50 patients or 100 patients, the process of getting that was almost impossible. You had to go and talk to the healthcare systems. You had to find all the data, curate them. And then curation itself was mostly focused only on the structured data, and all the unstructured data was not there and all of that. What we have been able to do is seriously manage to bring a significant large number of data points, currently at 4 million, and we can potentially cross around 20 million plus in the coming months and years. When we started, essentially, we went and acquired an electronic health record system with approximately around 500,000 population subset from Duke University, and started organizing the data in a function by which it can be queried by anyone, be a student, be a researcher, be a clinician, or anyone who wants to do research or R&D or analyze. That was the key foundational work. It sounds simple, but it's bloody hard, okay? And that is where we have spent a lot of our time and, sort of technology building around curation of that data, building a state-of-art industrial-scale curation machine, and putting that on a platform similar to Bloomberg, which we call DataBlue, was an extremely, extremely hard task, but something that we are very proud of having achieved it over a period of time.
So you just mentioned that how you acquired the data briefly. Before we jump into that part, share with us a little, what are the current solutions for Homas? What inspired you to innovate the current solutions? You mentioned you have this huge passion for becoming an entrepreneur, and you came across this data a couple of years back. What make you want to develop the solutions that you want to develop now, and maybe share some examples of what specific products that Homas currently has?
So if you ask anyone in the behavioral health, everyone will tell you that it's an area in which the endpoints are not well defined. And hence, if you really go to five different, it means if you are exposed to a behavioral health problem, let's say depression, and if you go and see five different therapists, then the course of action or the protocol with all those five are going to be different. And your outcome is not going to be standardized. That is not the case in other therapeutic area like cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular, and other things. To do all of that, and if you truly want to study that in a very scientific fashion, that is where you need data, and you need clinical grade good data by which you can truly understand as to what needs to be done and how to change that if the change is required. What we have been able to do is literally put a critical mass of data at a single platform by which this can be done. And in technical terms, we are trying to solve the evidence gap problem, that what evidence is there that it works? And if it works, then can it be replicated? And if it is, then that is what we have been able to do. And we have built a platform called NeuroBlue, which helps answer that, which helps answer to analyze the problem in a very objective fashion without opinions of one versus the other, but crude data collecting from the real world, So the simplest way to think of us is we have the largest real world data, which can be used for all kind of R&D purposes, and how that R&D can be used either to improve your care or to improve your research, or it can be used for marketing purposes, it can be used for HEOR purposes and market access purposes and what have you.
So what are some of your current customers? Maybe give us some customer profile, both within clinical setting and outside of the clinical setting. You mentioned marketing use or education use. What are you hoping to acquire as a question that entrepreneurs often think about?
Yes. So when we started, we went after with a very precise way of going after pharma sector. So in pharma sector, pretty much anyone who has a behavioral health pipeline, I would say majority of them are our customers. Without naming names, you know, it can be Johnson & Johnson of the world to Boehringer Ingelheim's of the world and Otsuka's of the world. Okay. Most of them, we are working one way or the other. We have worked with them one way or the other. So that is something that is, that's the primary customers. Number two, we also have started working with hospitals. And especially in that side, we work very extensively with NHS in the UK. And currently we have 10 different mental health trusts as our customers. And we are really aggressively working with many of them to go much deeper than where we are currently. A market that I'm very, very keen to work with, especially in US, is to work with CMS, to work with the payer market, to work with VA, you know, and really deep federal level where we can be the platform by which the data can be used to really change the quote-unquote, the quality metrics, the evidence metrics, the payment model, and enable that process that will be extremely powerful.
Amazing. So let's go back to the source. You briefly mentioned you encountered this data almost 10 years ago. So for an entrepreneur to successfully acquire this set of great inventory, how did you first come across this source? Did you go through an acquisition process, or how did you negotiate this data in the very beginning?
So certainly we went through the acquisition process. I came across this asset purely by accident, by meeting the person who was building it, who had built it for 20 plus years. And I met him in Singapore. And when he told me, my immediate reaction was, oh, there's a lot of data here and I could easily do something with that. And I saw a level of opportunity. I didn't realize how painful it was to extract the data and to really curate the data and clean the data. So I undermined that piece. And that's where the blindness of an entrepreneur comes in, right? You know, but at the same time, I was excited from that opportunity so that I could leverage that. And that leveraging was very powerful. Certainly, I had the advantage of having spent, you know, a decent number of my time and years in the world of, you know, the finance. Negotiating it and getting it done was, I would not say easy, but easier than many entrepreneurs who don't have that background. So I know the mechanics of getting a deal done. I know the mechanics. I've done that many times in the past. And I, to some extent, I'm also a deal junkie. So I'm always looking at deals left, right, and center, you know, and hence it came very easy for me to really go after in an aggressive fashion. We started the process probably somewhere by the end of 2014, and we are able to close the deal in the February of 2016.
So not to derail from our questions, but I find it very fascinating when you just mentioned you came across this data without any specific intention. There are a lot of student or aspiring entrepreneurs on this podcast from our listeners. Maybe share a little bit what made you realize that this is a valuable asset when you first came across it, and this could apply to any other industry in healthcare or outside of healthcare when students want to become a founder. If they, say, walking on the street one day, come across something that seems to be an opportunity, most people might just choose to walk past. What made you stop? What caught your eye? And if there are any soft qualities that you could share with our listeners on how to find their first EHR data or find their first bucket of, you know, gold?
So I don't think there is an objective formula, but the subjective way that I have think that what has helped me is I have been thinking around the problem for almost for 7 or 8 months. I've been studying the problem for a very long time. So it was not that I was new to it, and I had a sense of what could be the source of data or what could be the source that is possible. So the search that was inherent in my mind, that's number one. Number two, I love the idea of talking to many people. Left, right, and center. The people in the industry, people not in the industry, people who can be directly helpful. So my search is not always guarded, but it's extremely widespread. Okay. So having a predefined way of thinking around a problem is one thing. Having the ability to talk to as many people in the market and the industry gives you additional data point. Somewhere the serendipity happens by the combination of those two things happening. And at that time, if the serendipity happens, then the only risk at that particular time is, are you ready to take it and jump with it? Okay. Because with all due respect, finding is not the hardest task. The harder task is all around building it. And I have been building it for last 9+ years. That is where the larger task of bringing team, bringing capital, executing it, proving it to the marketplace, fixing the payment model, it's a work in progress. And hence, as much as the initial stage is important, I will not pay too much importance around having that serendipity or literally finding it, because that doesn't lead to success. The success comes after really delivering it to the marketplace where there your product and services are really loved by the marketplace.
That's really well said. So just a little summary, when you say if you come across things that have been on your mind as an aspiring entrepreneur, first to think about the problem, have a sense of what could it be the answer. And as you mentioned, the search is, it has been inherently on your mind. Second, love talking to different people and have the ability to talk to a variety of people to validate or devalidate your idea. I really love the third part that you mentioned, when opportunities arise, have that risk-taking mindset to work on it with your execution, and force just to continue building and growing. And I'm sure that's what entrepreneur, even for founders and CEOs of big companies these days, always strive for. So Homos recently announced an updated patient lives of 4 million, successfully ingested into your proprietary database and the analytical platform NeuroBlue you just mentioned. Could you share how the company acquired the new stream of data and your current plans with this 4 million data?
So we are continuously partnering with as many health systems as possible. And those partners are extremely important in terms of accessing the data. What we do is where our skills lie is in the curation of that data and making the data available back to the providers and to everyone else where it can be used. Our key intent is to really build the largest behavioral health data set that is out there. Even at 4 million, it is larger than anyone else in the marketplace. What we have is a highly enriched, NLP-enriched data that is of clinical nature. I would like to take the volume significantly higher than where it is. When we move from 500,000 to 4 million, that itself is 8x, higher than anyone else have seen in the marketplace. But I would like to take it to 10 million, 15 million, 20 million lives. Number two, I would really like to add additional layers of data and enhance the data quality, both by doing far more deeper NLP than what we are doing right now, attach claims data, attach PRO data, attach any relevant data so that we can study not only mental health on a standalone basis, but understand mental health where it is either a primary indication or a secondary indication. What do I mean by that? Someone having a depression is one thing, but a diabetic with depression is a much serious problem. A diabetic with depression and another layer of disease, so comorbid bucket of more than two disease area, is where the maximum cost curve gets influenced in any healthcare system. That is where an individual suffers the problem, and our current treatment protocol only focuses on everything that is non-behavioral health or non-mental health and doesn't focus in combination with the mental health itself. That part of the opportunity set need to be understood much better than what has been traditionally done. And it would be sort of a holy grail of the problem for us to solve if we are able to do that.
We definitely have seen big push across the industry on the whole person care. And as you mentioned, to combine behavioral health with physical health, we have seen a lot of innovations in the past. So very excited for Homos to continue pushing the data standard on this realm. Also recently, Homos has published a peer-reviewed paper on your novel natural language processing methods in the Natural Language and Processing Journal. Could you share your vision and innovation for implementing the NLP in your EHR data? Is this a done practice across the board of the industry, or you wanted to do this? How did you first think of implementing this very complex model?
So as you know, in behavioral health, the clue of understanding the longitudinal nature of the patient is hidden, or rather, described more in the notes that gets written. The structured fields are limited in that sense, and there is only so much that gets captured. Those unstructured fields to truly understand at scale, at an industrial scale, you need the technology of NLP. And you need probably even much deeper end than what has been done. We are probably one of the first company who have gone with a deep focus on mental health to truly do it for the last 5 to 7 years. And we have truly invested very heavily on that front. That is where our cutting edge technologies lie. If you ask me very frankly, if I think these technologies can be done 10x more if we had the right capital and the right resources and the right scale. But this is about to come. Number two, I would say if someone truly wants to build, you know, precision psychiatry so that, you know, we are able to solve psychiatry or mental health as precisely as we are able to solve cancer, then a data set of this nature will be almost the precondition for the training model of that data. Okay. So if you think that tomorrow Microsoft OpenAI thinks of doing something very massive in the mental health area and really wants to have a groundbreaking data set, then something like this nature will be very, very powerful to really go there. So the way I look at all of this is NLP has been extremely fruitful for what we have done so far. The scale that we are doing is good, but not great. I would like to put in 10x more investment behind it to really go to the level where it deserves to be done. There is a lot of still missing data, quality of the data, density of the data. Those are core fabric of the problem that is still unsolved. And I would love to go there.
Wow. Thank you for your humbleness of saying that you're not doing it enough. I'm sure a lot of listeners definitely feel that 4 million is a big number for them to acquire in the first place. As entrepreneurs, I understand there are still a lot of forte for you to overcome in the years to come and in 2024. So AI in healthcare started a few years ago, but really has been climbing up the hype across industries from last year, 2023. I'm sure we must hear too much about the word AI as of this point. So what is your vision of AI in healthcare specifically? Any key themes that you've noticed last year that you want to bring in this year, and any specific things that you like or you like to happen in the behavioral health space?
Yeah, I think in a very strong brushstroke, AI in healthcare, not only healthcare, but every other sector is here to stay. It's an emerging technology which is going to be far more powerful than we have been able to anticipate. And every prediction that we are making is basis of our own knowledge and limitations of our own brain, whereas this will change fundamentally in the coming years. That's number one. Number two, my take is that we understand about metabolic health extremely well or physical health very well. We don't understand our mental health or our quote-unquote brain health. AI will have a lot of meaningful sort of contribution to make in that area. The way we are understanding intelligence, the way we are understanding consciousness, the way we are understanding unconsciousness, all of that is going to change in a very meaningful fashion. Having said all of that, I would also say that AI does have the limitations because it requires heavy duty of data. And healthcare is a sector that we know the limitations on the use cases of data, you know, the clinical use cases of the data, but is nothing compared to other sectors like, say, defense, consumer tech, finance, and things of that nature. And that is one of the biggest limitations that we truly need to understand, that privacy and security of clinical data is important, but engaging them and using them is equally important. And that's the thin balance where a lot of deep policy question comes in. And I would love to have a much healthier debate around it than what it is being right now. There is a lot of quote-unquote either ignorance or fear-mongering or a status quo-driven approach happens. Whereas if we go with the approach of understanding that AI is here to stay and want to have a fruitful sort of discussions, whether it is with mental health or in general all the healthcare, then we need to have a much better thinking around data uses and how to use it than what we have currently.
Certainly, the battle of pushing AI is not one man's battle, and it's almost all man's battle. So a quick fun question, a lot of things that we think about at Warden is about partnerships and about different deals that you mentioned earlier that you are a quote-unquote deal geek. In a perfect world, what would be some of the partnerships that you ideally want to work with in the realm of pushing AI in healthcare, say with no limitations, no constraints on capital or resource? Are there any specific type of company or any specific types of organization that you would love to partner with in order to push your vision for AI forward in 2024?
Yeah, first of all, I would love to, a big precondition of all of this is having access and availability of the data. I would love to partner with as many healthcare systems that is out there in that space. Number two, I'm very keen to work with CMS and the, you know, the VAs of the world, because this problem is far more relevant for them than anyone else. And so things related with quality metrics, as well as any kind of driving the core value proposition that we can driven to the veterans, that would be extremely powerful. Or even jail system. Jail system is one of the biggest custodian of mental health patients. And, you know, anything that we can work there to improve, it will be extremely powerful. That's the precondition of, from the supply side of it. On the front end, there is a far more super rich, you know, large corporations who are really pushing the frontier of AI, be it NVIDIA of the world, be it Microsoft of the world, be it, you know, Google's of the world, and a lot of cutting edge technology that is being built. And a lot of them are getting deployed into areas that is beyond healthcare. Healthcare is at large, a very large social problem, okay? It is not purely a science problem, but it's a very large social problem that we need to cater to. If there is a way to engage this cutting-edge technologies into the frontier of, you know, mental health, I would consider it will have reaped the impact significantly more than other areas beyond healthcare. And I'm a big proponent that if there is a way that those allocation of resources can happen in healthcare in general and mental health in particular, I would consider that as a mega victory.
Certainly, we've seen some recent push last year in big technology companies going into this space. As you mentioned, it's a broader societal problem or societal situation to be improved. We definitely hope to see some cross-industry collaborations between traditional technology and hospital and health system settings, as you mentioned. So to kind of wrap around our podcast today or our episode today, what are some of the goals and challenge that you foresee Holmusk to overcome and to thriving in this year as we move towards 2024? Any celebration on your 10-year anniversary?
I always say that, you know, the survival is the main game here. You keep surviving till you learn to thrive. Okay. And so I'm very glad that I'm still here. I'm still around. I'm very glad that I still have the same level of passion and probably even more than what I had in year one. I had a lot of knowledge and learning and, you know, the help from a lot of people to get to where I am. Well, what I would really like to crack the code this year is go after the payer market in a big way. That is one thing that, so when I say payer, both commercial as well as the CMS of the world, that is something that is dear to our personal goal. I am biased towards the scale. I'm very, very proud of what we have built, but I would like almost to be 10x bigger than what it is today. And anything that propels me to have that achievement, whether it is in 2024 or in the coming years, I would like to have the basic tenet of it. So at the simplest level, I would like to maintain the level of sort of the commitment and the ambition that I have. And if I could go deeper into and really build at a much bigger scale than where we are, that would be my primary ambition at this stage.
Yeah, totally. To have the conviction and have the mission and have the dream in your mind to continue pushing your mission forward. To our aspiring student founders on the episode or as our listeners, do you have anything to share when things didn't happen in your early times of founding the company? There are a lot of things that might go against your way. What are some of the learnings or some of the spirits that you could share with our listeners who are aspiring founders trying to found their own company in the healthcare space or broadly? Anything that you think they can take away from today's episode when they want to found their own company?
Sure. There are two or three things that I would say. Number one, founding the company is not necessarily should be the goal, but being on a rocket ship should be the goal. It means work on a complex, large problem that has social impact value, or the value that directly impacts human being in whatever space. I think that should be the goal. Whether you found yourself or whether you work with someone else's founding, able to contribute positive, net positive value to yourself as well as to the larger society should be the primary goal. Okay. And if you are able to achieve that, mega success to you. That's number one. Number two, the more you think about a problem and you find somewhere that this is what is close to me, because there is an infinite layer of problems that is out there on a continuous basis. What problem attracts you is almost like falling in love. And literally getting to know that and finding that and having the ability to iterate from there should be the goal number two. And once you have done those two, I think the rest all falls into place in a very meaningful fashion. But having that ambition to find the problem that you want to solve with a potential net positive impact on yourself and the society, that goes a long way, you know, in my view.
Definitely. So have that passion of working on a large, complex problem and adding net positive value to the larger society could be a guiding principle for student founders to find their initial problem. Secondly, as you say, getting the problem, finding that problem is like falling in love or finding the love of your life. So if you do find something that you keep thinking throughout days and nights, it will be something meaningful to work on down the line. Lastly, to close out our podcast today, for students interested in working in behavioral health, a very trending and growing space in the overall healthcare space, what are some broader trends that you're seeing in the industry this year? And if you could recommend three companies to follow and stay close to, what would they be?
So I would say the big trend is certainly there is more and more a specialist network that is being built, both on the SMI side as well as in the non-SMI side. And when I say SMI, serious mental initiatives, mental health initiatives. So that sector is emerging in a big way. I think the larger question around the evidence gap is still out there, and the use case for that, for the payment model, for the value-based care contracting, as well as for really impacting with the comorbidity, all of that is still a legitimate large problem. There are policy implications of all of this, and there are real relevant policy questions to be had. So you can really think of at one side in the care delivery side, you can think of the data and impact side, and then you can think of the policy. Any one of these has a lot of value. The comorbidity angle that I talked about, that is another one that is very powerful to go after. I think if I really had to say the names of the company, I'm a big fan of Hallmark, so I'll put the number one, Hallmark itself. Anyone who is interested to work into this area, either at Hallmark or even outside anywhere in behavioral health, if I can be of any help, please do. Reach out and I'm more than happy to be of any guiding force I can be. Number two, in mental health, there is a good degree of new treatments to be found, both from the medicine's point of view as well as therapy point of view, and a lot of frontiers are still being open, both on the biotech side as well as on the non-biotech side. Anything that can be pursued in that side has extremely powerful value. Number three, you can't take away the fact that there is a lot of new technologies being built, you know, on whether it is AI side or, you know, just taking the standard names, whether it is OpenAI to NVIDIA's to the companies in that area. Look for cutting edge companies to that side, because there will be impact of those on behavioral health. So the simple can be someone wants to build a precision psychiatry platform. That's a legitimate large problem to go after. You know, how do we build, what technologies to be built, what the applications can be done? It has never been done. And a thing that is very close to my heart that I personally am very keen to pursue is there is not a single world-class mental health hospital in the world. You have at least every big city has one in cancer, but doesn't exist one in mental health. I would love to build that so that 20 or 30 years from now, the next generation doesn't have to worry about where is the center of excellence when it comes to mental health.
Wow, you certainly gave a lot of directions for our listeners to continue explore in this industry. So I want to thank you again for joining me on today's podcast. Really enjoyed learning about Hallmark's mission, how data and evidence plays into the whole behavioral health space, and how you continue to envision using AI technology to innovate standards and evidence standards in this industry. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.